Good morning. My name is Tracy, and I will be your event specialist today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the web conference for AEP Ohio CBP Auction. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that today's web conference is being recorded. You can ask text questions throughout the presentation. Locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen and select All Panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question. We will address questions at the end of the presentation as time permits. If you experience any technical difficulties during today's event, please press star zero on your telephone keypad to be connected with an operator. You can also use the chat panel to communicate any technical difficulties directly to me. At this time, I'd like to turn today's program over to Benjamin Chi from NERA. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of AEP Ohio, I'd like to welcome everyone to today's bidder information webcast. This webcast is focused on the November 2015 auction under AEP Ohio's Competitive Bidding Process, or CBP. Again, my name is Benjamin Chi. I'm with NERA Economic Consulting. NERA is the auction manager for this CBP. And presenting with me today is Dr. Chantal Lacasse, as well as Mr. Stephen Birick, also with NERA Economic Consulting. And with us on this line as well are representatives of AEP Ohio, who will help us address any questions if there are that are subject matter specific. So with that, I will start us off with one disclaimer. So first, this process has been approved by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, or PUCO, and there are a couple of governing documents that we have under this process. So the first governing document that you should know, or documents that you should know, is the PUCO decisions in case number 13-2385 ELSSO for AEP Ohio's third electric security plan, or what we call ESP3. The other documents that are part of this process include the bidding rules, or the CBP rules, the standard contract known as the Master SSO Supply Agreement, the rules and protocols for participation by associated bidders, as well as the Part 1 and Part 2 applications. So any statements that I make or that we make on this call that describes or refer to these documents or agreements are summaries only and are qualified in their entirety by our reference to such governing documents. And while we are on this slide, just want to flag a few acronyms that we will be using throughout this presentation. As you will see here, this process is pursuant to AEP Ohio's third electric security plan, which we will call the ESP3. We have CBP for the competitive bidding process, SSO for standard service offer, and PUCO, P-U-C-O, for the commission, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. All the governing documents that you find here that I have just mentioned or referenced can all be found on the CBP website at www.aepohiocbp.com, as you can find this address at the bottom of this slide. The CBP website is the central source of information for bidders. And this is a screenshot that we have here on the CBP site. On the left navigation bar, as you'll find many links, I will highlight three links here for you. And in particular, if you clicked on Contact Us, you can see three sublinks that are available. So I'm just going to highlight a few things here for you. You can find them on the right as well. So under Contact Us, there's a register link. This is quite important. If you have not registered to be on our distribution list to receive email alerts about upcoming events, deadlines, and announcements, we encourage you to do so today. to register so that you can be kept on the loop with our emails regarding the auction. The second is under Contact Us, there is a Ask a Question sublink that allows you to ask questions through a web form online. And all questions that we receive will be processed through the FAQ process. We will certainly respond back to the questioner, and then we will post the questions as well as the answers as FAQs on the website without identifying the asking party. And the third is for you to know that there is a application process that precedes your participation in this auction. The application process is online, and the first step in this process is for you to get an application website account. And to do so, you can request for an application account. That's one of the links under Contact Us. And with that, we will provide you login credentials, a username and password for access to the online application portal. And just one housekeeping here for you as well is that all the questions and answers that we receive and provide on this call, as well as this presentation and the audio recording, will be posted to the CBP website shortly after today's webcast. So the CBP website is maintained by NERA. NERA, again, is the auction manager. And we ask that you direct all communications to NERA as the point of contact managing this competitive bidding process. So if you have any questions, you can use the web form or you can contact NERA directly to have your questions addressed. But do not ask your questions to the utility representatives or to the commission representatives. This will ensure that we have a single point of contact, as well as information that is provided will be provided fairly and equitably to all bidders who will have fair access to that information in this process. This will help us ensure that the CBP rules as approved by the Commission are followed, and that will allow us to do our job in this process. NERA will ensure that bidder qualifications are evaluated fairly under the rules that are set out, and to administer the conduct of the auction and to present the results to the Commission. For today's agenda, we have five parts. We will provide an overview of the product as well as the process to participate, and we will also go over the terms of the transaction for this procurement event by way of describing the supplier contracts. So we'll talk about the product design as well as the contract, and then we will pause for a time of questions and proceed on to the latter part of this presentation to talk about the practical aspects, not what the process is that will be covered in the first part, but how to submit an application, how to submit your bids in the auction, and where to find information on the website. That's the practical aspects that we'll cover after we pause after part two of the agenda. So the last housekeeping item before I proceed is here, which is that you may ask your questions anytime throughout this webcast, but you must do so online using the WebEx interface. You will not be asking questions on the phone, but only via the WebEx interface. To do so, locate the Q&A box on the right side of your screen, select all panelists in the Ask box. Do not use the chat function for questions. Use the Ask or the Q&A box and select all panelists. Type in your question. Reference any slide numbers that are relevant and hit send. We will risk questions as we go along as long as it is practicable, and we will certainly pause, as I mentioned, in two parts of this presentation, once in the middle and once again at the end. So we'll start off the substance of this presentation here with an overview, and we'll start slide 7, just a recap of some of the product elements for this auction. So again, this auction is pursuant to AEP Ohio's ESP3, and those that have followed us in the last electric security plan, ESP number 2, here are some of the high-level changes that you should know. So this product that we are after today is a load-following full requirements product. Under ESP2, it was a load-following energy-only product. So by way, the fact that it is load-following, it means that the supply will be divided into tranches that would be denominated as a percent of the load of SSO customers. And you'll be providing a percent of a slice of system load of SSO customers. It's not going to be broken out by customer class or group, but it is just a slice of system of non-shopping customers, customers that are taking retail generation service from AEP Ohio. That's the load following piece that still remains. What is different in ESP3 is that it is no longer energy only, but it is now full requirements. You will be governed by the terms of the Master SSO Supply Agreement. The delivery point has also a different P-Node ID. It's provided here for your reference on this page 7. And as a full requirements supplier, the SSO supplier under the contract will assume load-serving entity responsibilities, including scheduling the SSO supply and making arrangement for the delivery of the SSO supply to the delivery point. Under ESP3, there are six auction events that are being scheduled. You can find them here on this slide number 8. If you look at the timeline on the top of this slide number 8, what is indicated by the blue bars are when we will be going out for these auctions. So we have conducted 2 auctions already in the early part of this year, in April and May. We're conducting one, for which this webcast is about, in November. That is auction number 3, also known as the November 2015 auction. And for this auction number 3, we are after a 24-month product. So you will see here the delivery terms and how they expand out in this graphical layout. So there's a laddering structure in place where the products that we are after for this procurement will replace supply that will be expiring on May of next year. So the delivery term, the delivery period that we are after for the 24-month product in this auction will start June 1st, 2016. Through May 31st, 2018. We are looking to procure a total of 17 tranches. There is a load cap in place. That means that for any bidder, you cannot bid more than 13 tranches in all. So again, we're looking for 17 tranches. We're looking to procure a 24-month product starting June 1st, 2016. Here are the results of the first 2 auctions that were held in April and May of this year. So in that auction, in those 2 auctions, the number of registered bidders, we have 13 of them. In both of the auctions, coincidentally, the auctions, each of them lasted 18 rounds. We have the starting price between $70 and $95. Delivery start period started on June 1st of this year, but there were 3 products, 3 delivery terms that were being auctioned off. in equal proportion in each of those two options. The clearing price, or rather the clearing prices, are provided here on this slide for you for the auction that cleared on April 28 as well as May 12. What is new for this auction, in this November 2015 auction? I'll flag a few things here that are noteworthy. First, as we having this auction number 3, application process has been streamlined for returning bidders. If you're a returning bidder from the prior auctions held in spring, just note that there is a abbreviated process that you can submit your application under. And basically what and how the process will work is that we will be sending a reminder of your login credentials to you shortly for returning bidders. And what is going on in the abbreviated process is in the part one form itself, some of your information will be pre-populated with your previously submitted information. And where you will come in is to fill in information that is not pre-populated, as well as to confirm information that has been pre-populated for you as you submit that information. This will facilitate the process for you to submit your materials and information to us. And the other thing to note for you is that the pre-bid credit instruments have also included some minor cleanup items from the previous versions. The letters of reference were updated to allow for a lower credit rating, and the posted letter of credit has also minor cleanup language from the prior version. So the key takeaway here is please take note that there are changes, minor changes, and you are to use the updated versions for this November 2015 auction. And over on this slide here, slide 11, I have this slide with a few of the key auction parameters for this November 2015 auction. So the auction start date is November 3rd, that's a Tuesday. We are looking to procure a 24-month full requirements product with delivery start of June 2016 through May 2018, looking to procure a total of 17 tranches for which any one bidder can bid and win only a maximum of 13 tranches. That is what we call the load cap. So supply will be divided into tranches, these tranches, and the tranche size is 1%. Each tranche is represented by 1% of the slice or system of SSO customer load. So that is by way of describing at a very high level the things that you will need to know as you enter into this auction process. The auction format is a clock auction. We will feature these 17 tranches of a single term. The term basically, again, is the 24-month term starting June of 2016. And how this works under a descending clock auction is that you don't name a price, but the auction manager will name a going price, and at a round, you, the bidder, will indicate how many tranches you want to supply at that going price that is announced. If at the conclusion of the round there is excess supply, more tranches that are being bid on by bidders collectively than what we need, 17 tranches in all, then from one round to the next, the auction will continue and the price will tick down. So if there is more bids received in the first round than what we need, we will proceed to the next round, we will announce a new price, a lower price, and the auction will end when there is no longer excess supply. And the last two bullets here you find on slide 12 is just to let you know that we understand not all descending clock auctions work the same way. There are variants to these auction formats. And to feature what we have in this auction is that there will be no sealed bid round for bidders in this descending clock auction. Rather, each round where a bidder is withdrawing tranches from the auction, you will provide exit prices as you withdraw those tranches throughout the auction. And as we close the auction will establish a single clearing price for the product, just one price for which all bidders will be paid under. We have a couple of other announcements here to make on the next two slides. The slide here on slide 13, in this descending clock auction, again, the auction manager will set the price, and importantly, we will set the round one price, or what we also call the starting price of the auction. And on this slide, we provide the minimum and maximum starting prices. So the round one price of the auction is not announced here, but will be announced on October 29, but it will be somewhere in between the ranges that we provide here. The round one price would be somewhere between $70 and $95 in dollars per megawatt hour basis. The other thing to note as we provide this starting prices, the range of starting prices here, is that in your application process, which we'll go over in a little bit, the Part 2 application process will ask you to name an indicative offer at the minimum and the maximum starting prices. An indicative offer is basically how much you're willing to supply at that price. And importantly, for the Part 2 application process, the indicative offer that you specify at the maximum starting price will set your initial eligibility, and for which you will also be required to support your indicative offer with financial security in the form of a pre-bid letter of credit, which we will explain as well in the later part of this presentation. So on the bottom part of this slide 13, here we provide you the PLC associated with SSO customers. At this point, we have updated this PLC. This is based on the five highest coincidental peaks experienced by PJM in 2014 for non-shopping customers, customers that continue to take generation service from AP Ohio. Given that the tranche size is 1%, one tranche corresponds to 1% of SSO customers' load, then what we have here is the megawatt measure of one tranche to be roughly about 28 megawatts for one, corresponding to one tranche. The supplier obligations, you should note importantly, is on a per tranche basis, per percent of slice of system basis. It's not on a megawatt measure basis. So the megawatt measure we provide here is only for reference purposes. You're responsible to follow the load, and the amount of the actual supply to be delivered will depend on many factors, including migration and changes in demand. Just take note of that, that this megawatt measure that we provide here is only for reference purposes only. Over on this slide 14 here, we have an announcement. Under the contract, payment to suppliers are to be adjusted based on seasonal factors. And this slide basically is to let you know at this time that the seasonal factors are set at 1 for summer and non-summer months. So based on this, we are simply telling you that you'll be paid based on the auction clearing price, and that there is really no adjustment given the seasonal factors are set at one at this point in time. Under the rules, we may update this prior to October 14, but we expect this to continue to be so at this point in time. So in terms of the key calendar events here, very quickly, as I've mentioned here, there is a two-part process to participate in the auction. We have a event that has just passed, which is the alternate guarantee process that has closed. In terms of the two-part process, the part one window will begin Wednesday, the 2nd, September 2nd. It will close at noon on Tuesday, September 22nd. The part two window opens on the September 29 and will close October 20th. There will be a chance for you for bidders that are registered in the auction. So you submit a part one application to qualify. You submit a part two, qualified bidders will submit a part two application to be registered to participate in the auction. For registered bidders, you will have a chance to participate in the and to practice the bid submission process using the auction software in the trial auction that is set on October 28, and the actual auction itself will be on the 3rd. And in terms of the web portal for receipt of your application materials, you will have access to those to that account by September 2nd when the part one window opens. We'll continue to update you with announcement throughout this process, and the announcements, I've already gone through them here in the prior slides. On today we have announced the tranche targets, the tranche size, the megawatt measures, and the range of starting price. We have up through October 14 to update any information on the seasonal factors and megawatt measure. And the round one price, the actual price for round one of the auction, will be announced to registered bidders on October 29. So to provide a little bit more information on the application process, the two-part process that we have, everything is done online. That's the main takeaway from this slide. Part 1 window opens September 2nd, ends at noon on September 22nd. You will log in to the application website account. You will provide us basic contact and company information. There will be forms that we call inserts, for which you have to download, print, sign, scan, and then upload back to the application portal. You can also use the application portal to upload any required supporting documents. And so, as you can see, there is no wet signatures that are required. You will have to sign things on your end, but you just simply need to take a picture or scan the documents and upload them back to the portal. The same occurs for the Part 2 application process. The window starts September 29, ends at noon on October 20th. You will provide us information required in the Part 2 application, as well as your indicative offers, and upload any signed documents that we call inserts back to the application portal after you have scanned them. The only item that is required in hard copy throughout this process is your cash or your pre-bid letter of credit. So that is the only item that is required of you, but besides that, everything else is done through the online application portal. In terms of the post-auction process, the auction results are subject to the final approval by the commission. The day of the close of the auction, when the auction closes, the auction manager will submit a confidential report to the commission. The commission at that point in time will have 2 business days to act or to make its decision regarding the auction results. If the commission does not act within that 2 business day window, then the results are deemed to be accepted. And while I say there is this 2 day window for the commission to make its decision, historically, the commission has made its decision within 1 day. Just take note of that, because once the commission has made its decision under the contract, the contract must be executed within 3 days of the commission decision. The master SSO supply agreement must be fully executed, and winning bidders must fulfill the credit requirements under the master SSO agreement within that 3-day period. And once it is approved, the commission may publicly release the auction clearing price for this auction, as well as the names of winning bidders. All right, we'll next move to talk a little bit more about the product that we are after, as well as the terms of this transaction. So here we'll start off on slide 19. As we have mentioned, this is a load following full requirements product. And when we say this is a full requirements product here, and a load following one, just know that you are known as SSO suppliers if you're a winning bidder and have signed a contract with AEP Ohio. You assume all responsibilities of a load serving entity. You're responsible for providing this service to SSO customers, and you bear all the costs associated with this responsibility. Full requirements service and the LSE obligations of winning suppliers are defined in this standard contract that we call the Master SSO Supply Agreement. You'll find a breakdown of the responsibilities of the SSO supplier and the EDC, the Electric Distribution Company, which is AEP Ohio in this case, laid out for you in the sample PGM invoice appended as Attachment F to the Master SSO Supply Agreement. All right, so on slide 20, I will cover the aspects of this load following full requirements service in 2 parts. So this slide will cover the full requirements aspect of the product. On the next slide, I will cover the load following aspect of the product. So when we say it's a full requirements product, what we mean here is that you, the supplier, will be responsible for supplying energy, capacity, ancillary services. You'll be responsible for certain transmission services as well as any other service as may be required by PGM to deliver that service. We have carved out certain things that you're not responsible for, and they are listed here for you. That includes firm transmission service from the delivery point, other FERC-approved non-market-based charges, as well as renewable resource requirements. So these are all laid out in Attachment F of the Master SSO Supply Agreement. In terms of the load following aspect of this product, so again, the auction is to procure supply for SSO customers. SSO customers are described as non-shopping customers or customers that are currently taking retail generation service from AEP Ohio and that have not switched to a competitive retail electric service or CREST supplier. So you will be responsible for any migration, any changes in demand, and SSO customers will include non-shopping customers that are residential customers, commercial and industrial customers, and will certainly include lighting customers, PIP, or what we call the percentage of income payment customers, as well as special contract customers. You'll be responsible for supplying a slice of system a percentage of the SSO customer's load corresponding to the number of tranches that you win in this auction. In terms of the credit requirements, there are two credit requirements and two unsecured credit lines. The way it works is that for any one of these credit requirements, AP Ohio will grant to the supplier an unsecured credit based on the credit rating as well as the tangible net worth of either the bidder itself or the bidder's guarantor. Certainly, if you are relying on the creditworthiness of a guarantor to be granted unsecured credit, you will need to provide to AP Ohio a executed guarantee that is acceptable to AP Ohio. And any exposure that exceeds the unsecured credit must be met by either a letter of credit or cash. So the form of the guarantee itself, as well as the letter of credit, can be found as attachments to the master SSO supply agreement. The guarantee is provided as attachment D and the letter of credit attachment E. So in terms of the two requirements, so the first requirement is known as the independent credit requirement, and the unsecured credit line that is tied or associated with this requirement is known as the independent credit threshold. So those two terms go together. The independent credit requirement, or ICR, is on a per tranche basis. It's an amount on a per tranche basis that declines throughout the term of this agreement. You can find the specific amount in attachment C1 of the master SSO agreement. The second exposure or requirement under the contract is based on a mark-to-market methodology, and the unsecured credit line associated with that is known as the credit limit. These two terms go together, and the mark-to-market basically would calculate the difference between the prevailing market prices on the valuation date and the date when the auction closes, and it will mark these contracts to market. And more information on this mark-to-market methodology can be found in attachment C2 of the master SSO agreement. And certainly all of the credit requirements are spelled out for you in Article 5 of the master SSO agreement. So with that, this concludes the first part of today's presentation.
And to submit questions, to submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen and select All Panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question. You will now be placed on hold music for a moment while our presenters review any questions. We will return momentarily. you're live again.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. We're back here. We have two questions that have been asked. The first has to do with SSO load and how it's been determined, and specifically, is there any change to the way SS load is being determined and being reported to PJM before June 1st, 2015 and after June 1st, 2015? And the answer is no. It's a slice of system load, and it is the load of SSO customers. It's the same way that it has been determined, no change in the methodology, and there is also no change in how we are reporting it to PJM for determining the amount of SSO customers load. So that's the first. The second has to do with special contract customers and whether there will be an update of special contract customer load. We will look into that and we will provide more information regarding special contract customer load after this after today's webcast. So with that, I will now turn the time over to Dr. Chantal Akas, who will lead us through the next two parts of this today's webcast agenda to talk about the practical aspects of how you submit an application and how you will submit bids in the auction. Dr. Akas.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. So this next part of the presentation is regarding the application process, and we've already provided some high-level details about how it will proceed, in particular that it's in two parts and that it's online, except for the submission of the letter of credit or cash as pre-bid security. So taking things kind of in order, I'll provide additional details on each part of the application process. And first, we'll start with how you do get an account to be able to access the online application portal. Now, the need to register is only for new bidders. For returning bidders, we will send you and remind you of your login credentials, which have not changed from the prior auctions under ESP3. And you'll receive that information by email from us. For those of you that do not have an account, you can register for an account through the information website, aapohiocbp.com, and you'll see on the left-hand side a link that you can click that says registered for an application account, and you'll be asked for some basic information, company name, contact phone number, and email. Alternatively, if you don't go through the website, you can just provide us with the same information, the company name, contact, phone, alternate number, and email address by email to us at aep-cbp@nira.com, and we will process and provide you with your account details. So some of the reminders, and we've covered these in the first part of the presentation, so let me go quickly on that. The application process for returning bidders is streamlined or abbreviated because when you get back into the forms for your application, some of the information, the part one, will be pre-populated with what you've submitted before. So you can either update, or if there are no changes, simply proceed to the next part of the application. However, some of the documents and the inserts, so these Word forms that you'll be filling out separately, have to be provided each time, and the financial information has to be provided each time. So you will be making certification, both new and returning bidders. You will be giving the information regarding your nominees, so your individuals in the bidder team that will be receiving correspondence from the auction manager and providing the financial information. The advice we can give you is basically if you have the credit instruments or the acceptable modification from a prior auction to re-download those documents. There's been slight changes, including allowing for lower credit rating for the letters of reference and small cleanup items and letter of credit. So please download those documents for participation in this auction. Once you have your account, then you can proceed once the Part 1 window has opened, or once we let you know that you can have access to the Part 1 form, to go to the application web portal at aepohiocbp-application.com, and you can start filling out the application. So this screenshot shows you what you're going to see when you log on. So you will be seeing the initial certification for the Part 1 form after clicking the Part 1 form on the left-hand links. And once you have accepted that initial certification, you will be able to proceed and fill in the application. Now, before you get much further, a reminder that there are those inserts, so those separate Word form that you can fill out and, if needed, sign, then scan and upload back into the Part 1 form. And you can download all the inserts at once on the Part 1 Insert tab for the application website. Now, you'll be downloading all of the inserts, but not all of the inserts apply to everyone. So let me just kind of go through quickly. So you have 9 in total. There are some that are required of all bidders that are in red here in this table, namely designating the representative, the acknowledgments from the representative of its responsibilities, the legal representative, and the certifications for the Part 1 application. The designation of nominees, so again, those are the individuals who, in addition to the representative, will receive all correspondence from the auction manager. And the nomination of nominees is optional, and returning bidders will be redoing that. Then there are a number of inserts that are for bidders that are in special circumstances. For example, if a bidder is not a load-serving entity in PJM, there's a specific certification that's required, and that's in insert P1-E. There are also additional requirements for bidders that are either foreign entities or rely on the financial standing of a foreign guarantor. And finally, any bidder that is in a bidding agreement or any arrangement related to the auction also has to provide additional information in the P1-I insert. Now, some of these inserts will also be retained in the Part 1 form for returning bidders. So the information that's retained in the Part 1 form is not just information that you filled in the field of the application, but also in some cases the inserts that you provided last time. So in particular, the designation of the representative, the acknowledgement from the representative, the legal representative, and the PJM insert, to the extent that you provided these, will be retained for you if you are a returning bidder. If you do leave those inserts as they are and you submit the application, you are confirming that the information is still valid and has not changed. So if there is a change, for example, to the representative of a returning bidder, then the returning bidder is expected to fill out a new insert for the designation of the changed representative and to replace the insert that will have been retained from the prior auction. So when you fill out the Part 1 application, you'll see that the requirements, what you will need to provide, are fairly simple. In particular, there will be contact information, so we discussed that already, the representative and the nominees that together are the bidder team to which we will provide all correspondence. A legal representative that has to be residing in Ohio, that is an individual or a company that agrees to accept service of process on behalf of the bidder. You also need to complete PJM requirements. So to perform under the contract, you have to be qualified as a market buyer and market seller in PJM, and you have to be a load-serving entity. And that's for the start of the contract. So if an entity is not a load-serving entity in PJM right now, then you will be required to complete a certification that there are no impediments to you becoming a load-serving entity by the start of the supply period. Other items that are required by the Part 1 form include the certification. These are in an insert as well, where you will agree to the terms of the contract, the Master SSO Supply Agreement, agree to the terms of the CBP rules, and also have a number of certification related to the confidentiality of information of the auction. There are also financial information requirements where you will be providing financial statements either for the RFP, for the bidder, if the bidder is relying on its own financial standing, or for the guarantor, if the bidder is relying on the financial standing of a guarantor. The credit rating for that entity, and there's also, as we mentioned previously when we were going through the inserts, additional information that's required for either foreign applicants or for a foreign guarantor. All of these documents can be provided through upload to the application website. There's also an optional portion for the Part 1 form, which is that you can request modifications to the pre-bid credit instruments, so the pre-bid letter of credit, letters of reference, or letter of intent to provide a guarantee. And you do that by submitting a red line of these documents. And again, you can submit that via upload to the application website. Those modifications that you request will be reviewed by the AEP Ohio and the auction manager, and any modification that's accepted for one bidder is then made available to all bidders on an optional basis. And the documents that you see on the website that have those acceptable modifications then come from prior requests from bidders in past auction for those modifications to the pre-bid credit instruments. And all those approved modifications from prior auction remain generally acceptable now and are memorialized in those documents. So just a note of how the upload of required document works in the Part 1 form. So there's basically three steps to that. First is that you will see a Choose File button within the Part 1 form, and you click that button. That opens up a window that allows you to navigate to the file that you want to include and upload to the Part 1 form. Once you have that window, you click the Open button once you have found the relevant file. And finally, you click the green Upload button in the Part 1 form. Once you've done that, you will see the file that you have uploaded. And when you have an insert to upload, you will also see in the Part 1 form the name and number of the upload that you are required to insert at that point in the Part 1 form. So the process generally in the Part 2 application is the same in the sense that you will have information that you will be asked to fill out. There will be inserts for you to upload to the Part 2 form. The difference is that here the requirements for new and for returning bidders are going to be the same. Generally, those requirements are to provide an indicative offer, and we'll talk a little bit about the importance of the indicative offer in a second, to submit pre-bid security that generally will be in proportion to this indicative offer, and to make certification, including for compliance with the association and confidential information rules. And there are also additional certification to be provided with the Part 2 application. So first, with the indicative offer, you will be provided some fields to provide an indicative offer, both at the minimum starting price and the maximum starting price. So we talked about the minimum and maximum starting price. So that's the interval of prices within which the price for the first round of the auction will be selected. And you're asked to provide an indicative offer, so the maximum that you would be willing to bid at those prices. And that maximum is a number in a number of tranches. The importance of the indicative offer of the maximum starting price is twofold. First, it determines the maximum number of tranches that you can bid in the auction. To be more precise, it determines the maximum number of tranches that you can win, that you can bid in round one of the auction. That's your initial eligibility, initializing in the round one of the auction. And never increase the number of tranches that you bid throughout the auction, and therefore it also determines the maximum number of tranches that you can bid at any time during the auction. It also determines the amount of pre-bid security that you will be required to post with the Part 2 application. It is proportional to the number of tranches that you put as your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. And you can see that in this screenshot. So the minimum pre-bid security, so that base amount, is the number of tranches in your indicative offer at the maximum starting price times 500,000, and that's what you will need to post as a pre-bid letter of credit or cash. Now, there are low caps in this auction. We've already talked about that in providing the low cap for this particular auction that corresponds to 80% of the tranches that are available. So that's a maximum to the number of tranches that any bidder can bid or win within the auction. But there's also a second type of cap, which is a credit-based tranche cap. And that's determined on the basis of the credit ratings. And it's not just for this auction, but is a cap that applies overall across all the auction under this CBP. And the particular tranche cap of 10 or 5 are provided in this table with the corresponding credit ratings for either the bidder or the guarantor if the bidder is relying on the financial standing of a guarantor. So the indicative offer is one of the requirements of the Part 2 application. The other is to submit pre-bid security, so we've talked about that already. So every qualified bidder, so every bidder that has had a successful Part 1 application has to submit with the Part 2 application a letter of credit or cash proportional to its indicative offer at the maximum starting price, namely $500,000 per tranche of that indicative offer. You may also be required to provide additional pre-bid security, and we will advise you of that when we provide to you a notification regarding your Part 1 application. If there is pre-bid security required, it will be in the amount of $300,000 per tranche. So, for example, if you are relying on the financial standing of a guarantor, then you will be asked for a letter of intent to provide a guarantee at the Part 2 application stage, and the amount of that will be $300,000 per tranche of your indicative offer at the maximum starting price. There's also certifications regarding the association and confidential information rules. So you will be asked, for example, to certify that you are not associated with another qualified bidder, and you will have the list of qualified bidders from the Part 1 application. And that's to ensure and promote the competitiveness of the auction. An association is a relationship among bidders that potentially could hamper a bidder's ability to compete with another. There are also certifications regarding the information generated by the auction to ensure that every participant will keep that information confidential. And there's also additional certification, such as agreeing that any bid that's submitted in the auction is a binding obligation to supply the number of tranches in the bid under the terms of the master SSO supply agreement, and agreeing not to assign any that a bidder acquires as a virtue, as given that, or at the point where the bidder has become a registered bidder through a successful Part 2 application. So the Part 2 form is also available online. You will find it through the same portal as the Part 1. It's just a different link on the left-hand navigation bar. And just as was the case in the Part 1 application, you will be able to upload the relevant Part 2 inserts. There are fewer for the Part 2 application. Namely, there's a certification insert that's required of all bidders, so all the certifications can be signed in one place through that particular insert. And for those bidders that select the option to submit their pre-bid security as cash, then there's an additional certification to be made that's in insert P2A. So that will not apply if instead you're submitting your pre-bid security or that minimum pre-bid security of 500 per tranche as a pre-bid letter of credit. So that ends the more detailed look at the application process. Again, if you're a returning bidder, you'll get a reminder regarding your login credentials from us. If you're a new bidder, then you need first, as a first step, to register to get an account to the application portal. The next part of the auction explains bidding in the auction. So we mentioned that it was a clock auction format. We talked a little bit about some of the characteristics of the particular clock auction that's used for AEP Ohio CBP. So we talked about the fact that it was a multiple round auction, and that means that in each round there are really kind of three phases of each round. One is a bidding phase, and that's when suppliers are going submitting their bids. And what that means is that a supplier will state how many tranches that they're willing to bid at the price for the round. Now, the price for a round will sometimes be called the going price for that round. In addition, for round one, then the price that will be the going price for round one that we've also talked about as being the starting price for the auction. And we've also mentioned that it was going to be selected between the minimum and maximum starting prices that we announced today. We will provide that starting price for the auction to registered bidders only, and we'll provide that to the registered bidders 3 days before the auction. So that's the bidding phase. It's going to be a fixed amount of time. That fixed amount of time will be pre-announced prior to the auction, and once the bidding phase closes, then the auction manager can then tabulate the results of that bidding round. In particular, the auction manager is going to calculate the going price for the next round. So to the extent that there is excess supply, we go to the next round, and the next round will feature a lower going price than in the first round. In addition, the auction manager calculates the excess supply and provides a range to bidders of that excess supply. And the actual amount of excess supply is in the range that is provided to bidders. So that's how each round kind of works. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about the features of the bids in round one and a little bit more in detail about the information that's provided to bidders in the reporting phase of the round, and talk about how bids can change between round one and the subsequent round. So bid in round one is simple. It's the number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at that round one price or that starting price. There's a constraint to that number of tranches. As we mentioned, it cannot exceed the initial eligibility, and the initial eligibility is determined by the indicative offer that's provided in the Part 2 application, that portion of the indicative offer, that's the number of tranches at the maximum starting price. And the bidder will not be able to increase the number of tranches bid throughout the auction, so will not be able to increase its eligibility. The eligibility can only go down from the initial eligibility in round one. Something to mention as well is the fact that the tranche target, so the number of tranches that are available for the product in this auction, could be reduced, and that would happen if there is insufficient supply in the first round of the auction to ensure competitive bidding, then the discretion to reduce the tranche target. And there are specific criteria that would lead to such a reduction, but those criteria are not announced to bidders. And once those pre-specified criteria, other some pre-specified criteria have been met, then the discretion to reduce the tranche target is eliminated. So in terms of the report, so the information that's provided to bidders in the reporting phase of the round, the bidder, the next round price, all bidders see the next round price, and all bidders see the range of excess supply. That range of excess supply is going to be narrower early in the auction when there's a lot of excess supply in the auction, and wider later on in the auction. And the range is always selected so that the upper bound of the range is a number that's divisible by 5. So all bidders see that information that's provided in what's called the common reports to bidders. In addition, each bidder sees the results of its own bid. Now, there's no information that's provided to one bidder about another bidder's bids, about other bidders' identities, or about their eligibilities or tranches left in the auction. Now, we said that the price was going to be reduced from one round to the next if there is excess supply in the auction. The question is, well, how is that decrease in price determined? So that decrease in price, the percentage decrease in price, is called the decrement, and it's going to be related to the amount of excess supply left in the auction, meaning the more excess supply there is, the greater is the percentage decrease in price. Now, in the bidder user manual, which is a document that is released to registered bidders, so to those bidders that are successful in the part two stage, we will provide information about how those decrements are determined. So a formula or a table will be provided to you for the determination of that decrement. Now, that being said, there is a formula, but the auction manager has the discretion to override the decrement, and that is not to use that formula. But when we do so, we do advise bidders that discretion has been exercised to override the decrement in a particular round. The bidder user manual will also provide the ranges of excess supply that we will be using in the auction. So all that is determined prior to the auction and will be known by registered bidders. So that's kind of round one. So round one, the bid is the simplest possible thing, namely just the number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at the price that is provided for round one, the starting price. So the bid in round two and subsequent round has the same flavor. It's always going to be the number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid at the going price for that round. However, prices will be reduced from one round to the next, and in response to those reduced prices, a bidder can either leave the bid unchanged, that's obviously the simplest, or a bidder could reduce the number of tranches that the bidder is willing to bid. And when the bidder does that, we say that the bidder withdraws tranches from the auction. Now, you know that there's two things the bidder can do: leave the bid unchanged, so leave the number of tranches bid unchanged, or reduce it. So the bidder cannot increase the number of tranches bid or cannot bid more than its eligibility. In round two, the eligibility of the bidder is the number of tranches that the bidder bid in round one. And in round three, in any subsequent round, the eligibility is the eligibility in the prior round, less any tranches that have been withdrawn. And what that means is that once tranches are withdrawn from the auction, a bidder can never bid on those tranches again for the remainder of the auction. When tranches are being withdrawn, the bidder will be asked for additional information. And the additional information that the bidder will be asked for is what's called an exit price. And an exit price is a final or best offer for those tranches that the bidder will no longer be bidding for the remainder of the auction. For example, the price in round one is $70 per megawatt hour, and the bidder bid three tranches, so that's the number it was willing to bid or supply at the prices provided in round one. the price comes down in round two to $65.75, and the bidder is only bidding two tranches. So the difference between the number of tranches bid in round one and round two is the number of tranches that are being withdrawn, namely one tranche. And the bidder can specify an exit price. So the bidder is saying that tranche that it is withdrawing, it's not willing to bid it at $65.75. It is willing to bid it at $70, and therefore there must be a price in between. That's that final last and best offer, the last or the lowest price at which the bidder is willing to bid that tranche. So in this example, $67.37, which is a price in between, is the exit price and the final and best offer. So that process will continue. So if we start in round one, there's excess supply, prices go down, bidders can leave their number of tranches bid unchanged or reduce it, and the bidders reduce their number of tranches bid until basically the number of tranches that are bid is equal to the tranche target, or as long, or the auction will continue as long as there is excess supply or more tranches bid than are available. When the auction closes, it determines a uniform price. So there's a single auction clearing price for the auction. And there are two cases of how that auction clearing price will be determined. The first case is if there are tranches that are bid in the last round of the auction are exactly equal to the number of tranches available, then the auction clearing price is simply the going price in the final round. If there are fewer tranches bid at the going price than there are tranches available, than the tranche target, then the auction clearing price is the lowest exit price at all the tranches available where the tranche target is filled, and that's the auction clearing price. And we'll give an example of that on the next slide. So in this example, from round 11 to round 12, what happens is that in round 11, there is excess supply. So the number of tranches bid minus the tranche target, which is the column at the right-hand side of the top table, shows you that there's an excess of two tranches. When we go to round 12, we go from having an excess of two tranches to having a deficit of three tranches. So to be able to fill the tranche target, we need to retain three tranches. And to know which tranches we are retaining, we look at the tranches that were withdrawn. So we went from an excess of two to a deficit of three. So five tranches were withdrawn between round 11 and round 12. And those tranches are shown to you in the second table from bidder A, B, and C with the corresponding exit prices. And to fill the tranche target, which is 17 tranches in this particular auction, then we would take the number of tranches bid at the going price first, because that's the lowest price, and then we would take tranches at the lowest of those exit prices, which in this case is $38.69, and we're still short one tranche, so we need one additional tranche, which we take at a price of $38.99. So the lowest price where the target is filled is $38.99, and that's the auction clearing price, and that means all bidders will get that same price, and that would be the price if the results are approved by the commission that would be in the SSO supply agreement. And indeed, the auction results are subject to commission review. The commission has a 2 business day window from the conclusion of the auction to review the results. Now that we've talked about the bidding at a conceptual level to explain what bids are and what types of bids each bidder can submit, now I'm going to talk a little bit on a practical level of the bidding method. So how you will submit bids during the auction is to submit bids online through the auction software. You'll have one opportunity to practice that, which is the trial auction, which will be conducted on October 28th. So you'll submit those bids online, and the last bid that's submitted and that's verified by the bidder in the bidding phase and processed by the auction software is going to be the bid that counts. And the reason that we point that out is that the bidding phase, as we explained, is going to be a certain amount of time. You will be able to submit your bid, and you will be able to change your bid all during that window. So if you do that, then the last bid that's submitted and verified, because there's always two steps to that submission of a bid through the auction software. There's a submission, and there's a step where you verify that the bid that you submitted is indeed what you want to provide in the auction software and what you're committing to. And once those two steps are done during the bidding phase and the bid is processed by the auction software, then the bid is valid. The backup bid procedure, so if you're having a problem with the auction software, it could be that you've lost connectivity to the internet, for example, then there is a backup bid procedure, which is by phone. So you will be phoning the auction manager, and a technical assistant will then be entering a bid on your behalf. So what happens is that someone will be logging into the auction software on your behalf and will be submitting the bid on your behalf through the auction software. So the same principle applies here then, that a backup bid will count when it's entered and verified by the technical assistant in the bidding phase and process in the auction software. And that's when the bid becomes valid. It's not when you are calling in. So it's going to be your responsibility to submit a bid on time. We'll provide you with the schedule for the auction ahead of time so you can plan when you will be submitting bids. It's also going to be your responsibility to make sure that you have all the systems that you need to minimize your chance of technical difficulties, as this could impair your ability to submit bids in the auction. Finally, it's also your responsibility if you are providing a backup bid, so if you're giving instructions to a technical assistant by phone, that the bid you're providing is consistent with the auction rules. To be able to use the auction software, there's nothing to download, no special software to download to your machine. It is web-based, so what you will need is just a standard PC running Windows Vista, Windows 7, or Mac OS 10.7. Of course, you will need an internet connection, and although it's your responsibility to determine which system you need to minimize your chances of technical difficulty, we do suggest that you have a secondary access to the internet, not just your company's network, but also an alternative internet provider, such as Wireless Card, for example. There are web browsers that are supported by the auction software. Those include Internet Explorer 9 or later, and the most recent version of Firefox and Safari. So you can also consider having various backup systems to ensure that you don't have difficulties in submitting bids in the auction, including bids in different geographical location and having backup computer equipment. That concludes the portion on the bidding method. I will then pass it along to Steve Burek, who will provide some information about the CBP website.
Thanks, Chantel. Hi, everyone. I will now give you a short overview of the CBP website and the resources for bidders that you can find on it. Okay, a little bit of recap. The CBP website is aepohiocbp.com, and this is the main clearinghouse for information for the CBP, including documents, announcements, FAQs, and data. And then on the slide, you can see the homepage. Two things to look out for. On the bottom right, you can see important dates and recent announcements. And on the left-hand side of the page, you can see a navigation bar. And that navigation bar has links through which you can access other parts of the site, including the calendar and also the information link. And this one's an important one for the upcoming auction because you can access FAQs and announcements through this information link. You can also review the documents related to the CBP. which includes everything in the picture above. It's all been posted at this time. And we're now going to focus on the next link down, the data room. The data room contains the same types of data as the last two auctions, which were both part of ESP3, but most series have been updated through May 31st, 2015 with the August data update. And just kind of as a rule of thumb, files are generally updated on the 20th of each month. For this full requirements auction, AEP Ohio provides hourly energy data, which is broken down by rate zone, and that's CSP and OPCO, SSO and CREZ, so shopping and non-shopping, or vice versa, and customer group. The aggregate files contain all customer groups and also a total. And in addition to that, customer counts are provided, and these are broken down into the same categories as hourly energy. So in addition to customer counts and hourly energy, you will also see PLC and NSPL data, and that is provided in aggregate for AEP Ohio and broken down into SSO and CREZ. And you can see monthly switching statistics that are broken down by customer class for total AEP Ohio, CREZ, and SSO as well. And last but not least, you will see unaccounted for energy in a file in the data room. So after you've listened to the presentation, reviewed the data room, reviewed the documents, if you still have any questions, you can go to the Contact Us tab of the website and click Ask a Question and submit it there. There's a couple of fields. You just fill them in. It's pretty intuitive. And we get your question, we'll process it, and we'll provide you a response by email in writing within 2 business days. And then all questions are then posted as FAQs on the CBP website. And your identifying information will be removed for confidentiality's sake. And yeah, and in terms of what's actually posted to the website, this includes questions from other avenues like this webcast and also email. And this whole thing kind of ensures that the process is transparent and fair to all bidders. And speaking of email, you can email us at aep-cbp@nira.com. And there's that email again, aep-cbp@nira.com. And our mailing address is here as well, but we stress that it's only relevant during Part 2 if you are submitting a letter of credit as collateral. The entire application process is electronic, either via the online application form or an electronic wire transfer. Unless you are submitting a letter of credit, we will need that hard copy in our office, signed original, and that office is 1835 Market Street, Suite 1205, Philadelphia, PA, 19103. All right, that concludes the presentation portion of the webcast. Operator, we'll take questions now.
And again, to submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A on the right-hand side of your screen and select all panelists in the Send To box. Type in your question and click Send to submit your question. And again, you will be placed on hold music for a moment while our presenters review any questions. We will return momentarily. And you're live again.
Thank you. We are back, and there are no questions at this time, so I'd like to thank everyone for coming to this bid information webcast. A couple of reminders very quickly. The presentation as well as the audio recording and the Q&As will be provided on the CBP information website. The first upcoming deadline, again, is the Part 1 application deadline ending or closing on the Part 1 date of noon on September 22nd. So if you are participating in this auction, do not miss that timeline of September 22nd at noon. The first step is for you to ask for an application account if you have not already have one from a prior auction. And so we look forward to your participation in this auction process. If you have any questions, please email us or submit your questions online. I'd like to thank everyone again and look forward to your participation in this auction event in November 2015. Thank you.
Thank you again for joining us today. This concludes today's web conference. You may now disconnect.